communism is not really a very sexy subject. It's not a hot subject neither. So my first question is, how on earth did you come upon this subject?
Well, for me it was a natural subject because I'd been studying it for 45 years. I began as a university teacher lecturing on Soviet politics and what we call comparative communism in 1964, first in Glasgow University in Scotland and then from 1971 in Oxford. So I had some experience of the subject. But I think perhaps more important reason is that now we know much more than ever before. We've got entirely new sources, transcripts of Politburo meetings, transcripts of meetings between Warsaw Pact leaders. And it is, after all, one of the most important stories, if not the most important, of the 20th century, the rise and fall of this movement. So I think it should still have quite a lot of interest for people.
Yeah, also because, in a way, you could say it determines the character of the short 20th century. You could say, I think, that the period which was opened by the Russian Revolution, that's the short 20th century.
Yes, and ended in 1989. And of course, we're in this 20th anniversary year. That was another reason for publishing the book now.
Okay. Yeah. The title resembles a bit Gibbon's Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. It's also a very huge work, your book, almost encyclopedic in character. I don't think there is any name who meant something in communism who is not mentioned in your book. But at the same time, your analysis of what communism really is, it only starts at chapter 6, I believe.
Well, I had to decide at what point I would discuss the defining characteristics of a communist system, and I think, you know, to start with abstract categories before the early history would have been a mistake. And so, you know, I even begin with ideas of communism in medieval times, when people look back to the early Christians who they believed held everything in common. And then I move on to Marx and Engels in the middle of the 19th century. But I think it's important to see the kind of historical roots. Though communism, as we understand it, definitely began with Marx, very obviously. I decided that fairly early in the book, but not at the very beginning, it's important to say, what do we mean by a communist system?
Yes.
But I think it was useful to show the development of the Soviet system under Stalin before doing that.
Yeah, of course. Now, in your book, you make a difference between communism with a capital C or with a small non-capitalized C.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, the system, the people who ran the systems called them socialist, but the term socialist has, of course, embraced a far wider range of movements, including entirely democratic parties and governments, and I think it's more ambiguous to call the systems socialist, and it's sometimes used simply as a way of discrediting parties or governments who might be entirely democratically socialist.
Mm-hmm.
Just as in everyday speech, most people refer to those countries as communist states. I would justify the use of communism. And as you mentioned, I've got a chapter in which I say, what do we mean by an actual communist system? But of course, it was part of the ideology that they were working towards this future classless society in which the state would have withered away. And that's what they called communism. It was an illusory utopia, but in a sense they couldn't renounce that goal because all the hardships of the present, you know, were to be justified in terms of this goal which they would eventually reach.
It gave meaning to their existence.
Absolutely.
In that respect, communism is also an internationalist movement, but there's something quite peculiar about it, because you have the internationalism on the one hand and then the theory of socialism in one country on the other hand.
There was always a tension in the Soviet Union between the internationalism and the interests of the Soviet state, and when it came to the choice, the interests of the Soviet state would come first. So, when Stalin came to an agreement with Hitler, the Nazi-Soviet pact, that was a blow to the international communist movement, but Stalin thought it was in the interests of the Soviet Union at the time. Whether it was is quite another matter.
Yes, of course. Also something I'm wondering about, you have this huge figure of Stalin with a major impact, and his rule is marked by certain kinds of barbarism, but at the same time, the communist doctrine, if you like, it comes from the Enlightenment, it has its roots in the Enlightenment, it's a rational theory, so how did it come about, this Stalinist barbarism, in your opinion?
Well, I think there were some flaws in the theory as well, even if it had its roots in the Enlightenment. Lenin had no place in his theory for opposition or even for legitimate competition among political parties. So Lenin built an authoritarian state. He created the Cheka, the secret police, who became NKVD, then KGB. So, you know, the idea that there was a kind of idealistic version of communism, that everything would have been all right if Lenin had lived longer, I don't believe that either. But Stalin was a true believer in Leninism, but an even more ruthless character than Lenin, and he had a kind of paranoid fear of enemies. So, you know, I think we need to look at partly the institutional arrangements of a communist system which made possible someone like Stalin and allowed him to get away with it, as well as the personal characteristics of Stalin.
So you think that in fact the failure of the communist systems, as you call them, is somehow rooted in its very origins, in the very doctrine which underlies it?
I think it is rooted in the doctrine, which had no place for an independent judiciary, no place for checks and balances, no place for holding leaders to account, no place for party competition. So I think there are fundamental flaws even in Marxist-Leninist theory.
But were they not enhanced by the mere fact that everywhere where the communist systems were created were countries in the periphery of industrialized society, which were also isolated after the takeover of power?
Well, this is certainly true, and of course Marx expected that in the most advanced industrial countries, communist parties would be successful, and the opposite happened, and the two most important cases of communist rule being established were in overwhelmingly peasant countries, Russian Empire and China. And of course one can also argue that Russia itself had a long authoritarian tradition, which certainly didn't help the progress of any kind of democracy after the revolution.
Of course. At the same time, this demise of the communist systems, is it definitive? Is it irreparable? Because today we have a world capitalist, globalized economy and society, but at the same time it's in a very deep crisis. So is there an alternative to this present society, and could it be in the same or somewhat like it communist direction?
I don't see any revival of communism as such, and I think that it reached a dead end, and China is flourishing economically through having abandoned a communist economic system, even though it has features of communist political system still. But I think it was entirely wrong at the time of the fall of communism to imagine that this is the end of history, there are no alternatives. I think there are many alternatives. And if you look at what has happened, as you say, in the last year, global crisis of capitalism, but also the even greater threats to the planet, you know, climate change. There are so many problems that can't be resolved simply by unregulated capitalism that I certainly see a future for social democracy and for many, many different kinds of market economy.
Mm-hmm. For example, in Latin America at the moment, you not only have the survival of the Cuban Revolution, but also what is happening on a continental scale, so-called socialism of the 21st century.
Yes, what remains to be seen, you know, how that will develop, and I think that Cuba itself will change, and it would have liberalized a long time ago, but for the incredibly stupid American policy over 5 decades of doing nothing to help Castro, and so in fact this strengthened Castro as the David who defied Goliath. President Obama has got a more intelligent policy, and so I think in general, if you want an oppressive regime to liberalize, certainly a communist regime, then the more interaction and engagement, the better. And so America was really very stupid there. That's not to say that Cuba would be well advised to copy all aspects of the United States. They have got, though they're a much poorer country, they've got the same average life expectancy as the United States, same average infant mortality rate. So they have some achievements, including their medical system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.